Welcome to Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, you can own a piece of the land with a loan from Bank of St. Lucia. So go check out Bank of St. Lucia, proud sponsors of the Youth Unplugged right here on Radio Caribbean International. My guest today is... How should I introduce this young man?
By my name.
So I would like to introduce Everest Jamari to the public. Mr. Jamari Jr., welcome
to... Yeah, have to make that distinction.
Yeah, gotta make that distinction. Next thing people start calling and think it's all political. good afternoon and welcome to the studios of Radio Caribbean International. Of course, you're from Plug. We talk about what young people are doing. You don't look as young, you know, because of the barber.
It's just the beard. I'm still young.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself for those who may not know who Everest Jamari Jr. is.
All right. Well, good afternoon, first of all. Mm-hmm. Everest, first son of Everest Jamari, the more well-known one. graduate of St. Mary's College. Yeah.
Whoop, whoop.
And South Louis Community College. I also went to university... in Birmingham, UK, Birmingham City University, where I graduated with a degree in criminology and psychology. And I've been working in the family business for, I believe, the last 9 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like little hobbies like football, reading, your standard stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a very avid community service kind of guy. So those who know me know my history in Rotaract and Rotary and giving back in whatever manner I'm able to. But in a nutshell, that would be it, yeah.
Now, let's talk about your growing up. Of course, you were an avid swimmer back in when you were a little fitter.
Man, you remember that?
Yes, I actually remember that, avid swimmer. What did you think your career path would have been?
Interestingly enough, the first time I knew what I wanted to be, and that's not like when you're a child, because I think when I was a child, I want to be a police officer or some stuff like that. Like everyone, that's what you saw around you, you know? So it was like five, six, is whatever. But the first time I knew what I wanted to be seriously was maybe about 16, 17. I just watched a Law and Order, SVU, and the criminal profiler on that, Dr. Wang or something like that, I had so much appreciation for what he did, and I've always been interested in the human mind and how the human mind works. And I was like, you know what, that's what I want to do. So I actually went to study criminology and psychology, understand the human mind. It's not like, for me, it's never about what we do, it's why we do it. Mm-hmm. That dream crashed, interestingly enough. I'll give you that quick tidbit. While I was in my second year of university, we had like, you know, your career path kind of discussion with your tutors. And I told my advisor, hey, I want to be a criminal profiler. And he looked at me and said, that's not a real job. And I'm like, what do you mean? You're like, but what you're describing is for serial rapists, serial murderers. That's not a job in England. We don't have crime to that degree where we need someone who has that specific job. If there's one of these cases, you would have to consult someone who's in that field. But there's no job as such. If you want that job, it literally only exists in the States right now. So you'd have to go to the States, become a citizen, join the police force, get recruited by the FBI. And so that was never in the plans. So I was like, forget all that. So that's what that was, that dream. But I've always still been interested in the human mind and how the human mind works and why we do what we do. After that, it came back and we had just opened, like it really coincided with the time I just finished university, another branch of the gas station. For those who don't know, yeah, I manage a gas station.
Right, we'll get to that. I guess we're getting to it now.
But that coincided with the opening of that gas station. So, you know, they brought me and was like, hey, we're opening a new branch. We want to put you down there and see how that works out, and I've been there for like the last 9 years or so.
True. Now let's talk about your epiphany. What's the negative of epiphany? Because we need to find that out. Like, how did you feel after knowing that you actually studied this and you put so much effort and you're so excited and knowing that, hey, this is, you can't really necessarily pursue a full career in criminology in the UK?
I mean, to be fair, I could have still pursued something along those lines, but when it wasn't what I specifically wanted, I kind of lost but the plus side was, especially with a degree in psychology, it still opens a lot of doors. Like, there's still so many things you can do with a degree in psychology. Criminology is a little more specific, but it still helps you understand the psyche of people. And that still helps me in my daily life, at work, at home, at play, whatever, that psychology, the stuff I learned studying psychology, still has a serious impact on, you know, life on a daily basis.
Now, I like that you touched on that and said it has an impact on everything you do. Mm-hmm. Like you rightfully said, you run the gas station in mm-hmm. town, the Jamari and Sons in town. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that gas station has the absolute best customer service.
I appreciate that.
Why is that?
I appreciate you for saying that, first of all. And that started from the time we set up. When we were initially setting up, it was a little twofold. I had to look at it because there were three gas stations already in that area.
Right.
There was on the Chaussee Road, that's north-south, I believe. Mm-hmm. There was already the other Jamari gas station by Wasco, and there's the fisheries. So, you know, we're coming in really late in the game. How do you build a customer base when people are already used to buying gas elsewhere? So looking at what drives customers, that's why I did initially, you have, you know, the price of your good, the quality of your goods, the location. And all these things were things that were beyond my control. I couldn't change the price of gas.
Right.
The quality of gas is homogenous. Everyone sells the same gas for more or less. The location is where it is. I don't choose where we go. And one of the things that you can have an impact on is the level of service. And that's where I decided to put my focus, and it worked because that's the kind of person I was interested in, giving the best service, make sure when people come in, they leave here feeling a little better.
Right, right.
So that is where I put all my focus initially, and I brought in people who I thought could assist with that. And customer service is one of those things that it will go unnoticed for the most part if it's average. It will only stand out if it's terrible or if it's great.
Right.
So knowing that, I didn't. It was not enough to just not be terrible. You had to be great at it. So that was my driving force, that motivation for me. That's how I wanted to stand out in that market. And I think we did a good job for that. And I mean, there's only so much credit I can take for it.
True.
Because I'm not the one who's actually, you know, interacting with customers. But I do think my personality and, you know, what I train the customer service attendants to do does have an impact. So, I mean, it's twofold. I am proud of what we have done down there. We've built a solid customer base.
Indeed.
And, yeah, it's just one of those areas that I'm happy that we're able to stand out in that regard.
And it's pretty cool now because people go there just specifically for the service. You could go there with having a bad day, and I'm not just saying that because you're here. You could literally go there having a bad day and leave because somebody makes some kind of little comment, makes you smile. Everybody's willing to, can I wash your windows, sir? Do you need anything from the store? And you don't really get that service around the country, which is what I'm going to lead into next. What plans do you have for taking what you have done with your own business or the family business, so to say, mm-hmm. and taking that out and give to the rest of society? Because let's face it, we have a serious, serious issue with customer service across St. Lucia. I think it's across the Caribbean, but nowhere is worse than Barbados. But I'm going to get in trouble for saying that.
I don't care,
but I'm saying it. But let's talk about what are your plans to assist other businesses with bringing the customer service to the level that it's supposed to be.
I mean, I think I reached a point where I realized, you know what, I'm actually good at this. Because staff would change, and I was still able to maintain a certain level. So at that point, I was confident that it wasn't just, there was something I was putting in here that helped. Excuse me. And what I've now realized is that, okay, I actually have a passion for service beyond just where I work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to use that to now branch out. And I've started my own consultancy business for customer service and management. And some of the reasons I did that, one, I want to see genuinely service improve at first, well, within the island and then towards the wider Caribbean. Like, honestly, we need to do better. It's there's no need for the level of service to be at the state it's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like going out to places and receiving the kind of customer service I'm receiving right now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a part of the solution to that. And mind you, it goes a lot deeper than just, you know, going to businesses and improving their customer service. That may be a whole problem with our country, as in how we are raised and whatnot, because some people are just not service-oriented. But
true.
Part of that is, you know, knowing who you hire and all these things. And what I learned, I've seen other consultants, other consultancy businesses do that job. And some of the key things I noted were that people come in and they try to give you a crash course or give attendants or whoever your frontline staff a crash course in how to be a good customer service agent. And then they leave. And somehow you expect these people to now be good at customer service. It's never going to work like that. If you want behavior to change, it's going to have to be a culture change in the organization. And that's never going to come from the bottom up. That's going to come from the top down.
Wow.
So the difference in what I'm trying to do here is when I go in, I don't just come and train your attendants. I want to speak to your middle management and your management. I want to give you the tools to consistently train these people on a regular basis. Because one person coming in every 6 months is not going to have any lasting effect. It has to be a repeated action.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to do is speak to middle management, speak to supervisory personnel and say, well, hey, here's where your staff is right now. This is the organization of your business. Here's what you need to do to make sure these people are achieving what you want them to achieve at the level you want them to achieve it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even beyond that, make sure that you are providing an atmosphere in which they can succeed. Because that's the next thing that I don't think businesses do. You expect your staff to excel, but you don't give them an environment mm-hmm. to excel in.
And not only that, measuring sticks.
And that's the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what they need to do to excel.
Right.
So all these are part of the training I'm trying to provide. Like, hey, does your staff know what to do? And when I say know what to do, I mean specifically, do you evaluate them? Do they know, hey, this is... And part of the training as well is I'm going to break everything down in as simple as I can and attach numbers to them to make it easy to understand. So, hey, when I give you a score out of 10, you know why you're getting that score. You know what's the minimum I'll accept, what I'm hoping you achieve,
mm-hmm.
and what's acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I break down that. So you have to have those measuring sticks. You have to be rewarding staff when they do well, encouraging staff when they're not doing well. Give them targets to achieve it. It's a lot more than what I've seen of just come and teach you, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. Here's how you're supposed to do it. It really does come from a managerial aspect and then filter down to your staff. And that's what I'm hoping to achieve.
Because let's face it, your staff or your bottom line staff are more likely to change
faster
than your management. So imagine that you come and you've invested money into training the bottom line.
And they change. You have to go
and
do it all over again.
Your management doesn't change and the cycle continues.
And at some point, if your bottom line staff is changing that much...
It definitely shows that the middle management...
Maybe the middle management is where the problem may be. But, you know, these are things that all... businesses and organizations need to really look at. It always seems that, you know, the first point of contact is the easiest to replace, I suppose. So
mm-hmm.
that's the quick fixes, and everything seems to be an attempt at a quick fix. And it has to be much more detailed than just a quick fix.
I definitely agree with that. But one of the things is, of course, you being young,
ish.
Youngish, yeah, because just how we old, unless you're just how we old. You being youngish, now, how difficult it is going into a business space, an established business place, and having to talk to these middle management people who, of course, are stuck in their ways. They're older than you, and you coming to them as a younger person, and they're like, I was working before you were even in your nappies. Who are you now to tell me how should I run my business or how I should manage my staff? How have you dealt with that?
And that's one of the more difficult aspects, because a lot of people are not receptive to change, especially if you've been in the organization a long time. But at the end of the day, I'm here for a reason. So for me to say, well, you've been doing this, and that's one of the most dangerous phrases I've ever heard, we've always done it this way. That drives me insane. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, especially when what you've been doing hasn't been working. Why would you still cling to we've been doing it this way? Ideally, this only works where you have people who are willing to make it work. Like, I cannot change your business. All I'm intending to do with my consultancy is give you the tools to change your business. If you choose not to take it on, there's nothing I can do about that. But what I'm definitely leaving you with is the blueprint to improve on how your business is functioning. after that, it's up to you. So I don't beat myself up too much over those who are trying not to take on what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But I just want to be confident that I gave you the tool, that when I left there, I know that you know what to do to make things better. Mm-hmm. And I guess the next step is getting those people to actually implement. Because I, for me, the confidence that once you implement it, you will improve, almost leaves me like, okay, you know what, I'm satisfied. Because I know once you do it, it'll improve. It's just to get those people to actually do it. Because what you're doing right now is not working. So why wouldn't you at least try it? So that's the frustrating part for me.
I can imagine. Now, what has been the most interesting since you've been doing this, even if with your own establishment, mm-hmm. What's the most difficult situation you've ever had to deal with, or in terms of trying to kind of mindset change? And
I have a lot more experience at work with it. One of the most difficult aspects is probably realizing that, hey, this person is not suitable for this job and you have to let them go. And it's difficult insofar as they're good at so many other things surrounding the job. But at the end of the day, the primary focus of the job is customer service. If you cannot do that, you're negatively affecting what we're doing. So that's been some of the difficult ones for me. Because I have people who are, they're hardworking, they're always on time, they're always willing to help, but they're just not good with people. Mm-hmm. So it's a very difficult thing to be like, hey, you're good at all this stuff. And when people feel like they're working hard, they feel like, you know, what's the problem? I work hard. But it goes beyond that, especially in a service industry. If this person is not good at it, you have to accept that that's not their strength. And ideally, you have somewhere else you can, you know, fit them in. But
true.
If it's not their strength, it's just not going to work. And to identify in the early stages who is good with people, who is not good with people. Like, I get resumes all the time. I've never hired someone off a resume.
Wow.
Until I've spoken to you personally, mm-hmm. and I see how you interact with people in general, that's what lets me know whether or not you're suitable to be in the service industry. So,
pretty amazing. Now, we have a lot of business people listening. Not to cut on your potential bread, like we say. can you give, especially the managers listening right now, if you're going through a hard time with your staff, you find that you're doing the same thing over and over again,
definitely
reaching the same results,
yeah.
and you want change. So, I wanted to offer three. Free.
Free is very important.
Free.
I charge for this.
I wanted to give three free pointers.
Pointers. Well, okay, first one, if you're trying to change a culture in your business, the first thing I want you to do is give your staff an evaluation sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to remain anonymous. Because I want them to write down what they think of you as a manager, right? And it has to be anonymous, obviously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is when you start to truly get an idea of how your staff feel at work. Because you may think you're doing a great job. Honestly, you think you're doing... I mean, the first time I did it, I figured, you know, my personality and how I treat people, it should encourage them to work. I did it, and then when you see what people think, it's a humbling experience, first of all.
Wow. How do you not take that personal when you say, well, I think you're an a-hole, I think you're this.
I didn't go that far.
but how do you deal with that? Give that advice to her while you're answering that.
You have to be willing to realize that this is not about you. This is about improving your business. And if you are, it's better to know that how your staff truly feel in order to improve. If you don't know you'll never be able to improve mm-hmm. on what you don't know. So you have to take yourself out of it. It's difficult, because when you first see it for the first time, especially when you think people like you or they respect, it's difficult to be like, oh, that's how you really feel. But once you get past that initial thing, then you start to see, okay, well, these are the issues that people truly have. Because you ask them and they'll never give you an honest response in person or whatever the case may be. But under the condition of anonymity, and you know the word.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's...
Don't let Kibe hear you. Sure.
You know, you get the truth. And from there you have, okay, here's where I actually need to go to get these things to where I need them to be. So that's the first thing you need to do. Get a true idea of how your staff feel at work. And it may not necessarily be about you, the whole evaluation sheet, like just the working environment, the working condition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you need to start with. Number two.
Don't give out too much details. Don't spoil it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not giving you what's on the evaluation sheet, but if you can create one just based on that information, go ahead. But the second thing is to make sure that your staff's job description, if you will, their objectives are clearly
outlined
and specifically outlined. That is for you and for them, because you need to be able to evaluate how a person does at their job in a very specific manner. Don't just tell me you're doing well, you're doing poorly. What am I doing well? What am I doing poorly? How specifically can I do better at my job? So that's the next thing you have to look at. And finally, beyond evaluation, make sure there's a system of reward and, I don't say punishment, but, you know.
Consequences
is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think that's a better word.
That's the word I'm looking for. Reward and consequence. You can't just say, oh, you did a good job, great, pat on your back. Or, you're doing terrible, do better. There has to be consequence when an employee is not achieving what they're supposed to be achieving. There has to be some element of recognition or reward when an employee is achieving at the highest level that you want them to achieve.
And that reward does not necessarily be monetary.
No, absolutely not. It doesn't have to be monetary at all. Well, what I try to do is when I see staff consistently doing well, I reward them, whatever it may be, like a lunch here whatever token of appreciation works for you. But you don't want to make it something that is expected, because at the end of the day, you're working for a salary. That's our trade-off. But if I see you excelling, I want to let you know that I recognize that you're excelling and I want to reward you for it. And I don't want to also get people into the habit of rewarding people for just doing their job. You do your job to get paid. If you excel at your job, you get rewarded. All right? So
there's a big difference.
There's a big difference. Mm-hmm. If you're just doing your job at the average standard, then your salary is your reward.
True.
If you're excelling at your job, then you definitely need some kind of special recognition. So these are the three things I would advise.
Three very important things. And of course, we just talked about the service consultancy.
Yeah.
I know you have to touch in, because I don't know, it's like a whole mental state for when you're part of the Rotaract. You have to talk about about the Rotaract Club. Now, you're the past president of the Rotaract Club, of St. Lucia, and now a general member, I could say, of the Rotary Club,
incoming president, incoming chairperson, depends on how the Satellite Club goes. And the thing is, I don't go too into detail about that, because we're a newly formed club, we're still forming, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into the details, it's for those who are not involved in that,
it becomes complicated.
It becomes a little confusing and complicated.
Tell us, how did you get into interested in being part of the Rotaract, and then now because of age going into Rotary?
Yeah, that was also just out of university, and you know, university gives you that altruistic type of vibe where you want to give back to community and whatnot. It helps open your eyes to a wider world, if you will. And I did want to give back because I like helping people, honestly, I do. And this was an avenue to give back on a much larger scale. When you're part of something, it allows you to give back on a much larger scale. And what made... I wanted to join a service organization. What made it Rotaract was the young lady I was seeing at the time happened to be a member. So that's why I ended up that specific...
The good women.
In that specific organization. But, I mean, that has been one of the most influential avenues of my life this far. That is one of those things that have built me professionally, personally. You know, my confidence levels, I mean, they were okay, but that helped my speech giving. That helped me feel confident in... I had to do radio interviews for Rotaract, so I had to get used to speaking to people. So that was an amazing experience for me, and it has drastically contributed to who I am today, I think.
Amazing. I guess I'm going to be saying that soon. That's a whole different story. Everson Shamari Jr., what's next? What's next for you?
What's next? I mean, right now, it's trying to get the, well, for one, family business to improve. And that was one of the things I wanted to do, because without sidetracking too much, one of the struggles with working with family or being in a family business, I should say, is that when you look at your peers and you see the jobs that they have, and, you know, they had to apply for those jobs. They had to go and do certain levels of work for that, for those jobs that I didn't necessarily have to do. So you feel, especially in the beginning stages, it felt like they earned where they were, as opposed to me who didn't earn my position in that job. And that was one of the hardest things I had to deal with in those early stages. And luckily for me, I had a proper... Because at one point, I wanted to leave the business just to prove that, hey, I don't need this, you know. I can actually do this
on my own.
On my own. But, you know, you have some... I had a good circle of friends who gave me solid advice. Like, listen, families work their whole lives to put their children in positions that you're currently in. You're just going to sacrifice that to prove a point? Well, why are you basically hustling backwards? And from there, then, okay, you know what? You have the opportunity... Show that you deserve to be in this position. So what I'm trying to do now is not only prove that I belong here, is prove that I can also contribute to making this bigger than what is. So that has been my focus. And I think I have been doing that to a certain extent, because we've won awards for customer service locally, regionally. So definitely I know that I belong. However I got it, I'm showing that I deserve to be here.
True.
And my focus now is how do I build on what already exists to make it even bigger than it could be. And with the consultancy as well, I mean, 5 years from now, I want to be going around the Caribbean saying, hey, this is how we're improving on, you know, customer service. This is, these are the tools to do it. So yeah, that's what the future I'm hoping looks like for me.
Now, you made a very interesting point that I want to stress on, because I can rightfully say you're a born with a almost silver spoon in your mouth.
I don't know about rightfully say it. You can say it.
I can say it. And it's really good that you're trying to prove that, hey, it's not because of this. I actually, and you have it in yourself. And not just to prove to society, you also want to do it to prove to yourself that, hey, in case that this doesn't work out, I can make it on my own.
Yeah, and I mean, the consulting is not just to prove that I can do it. I know I can do this. This is actually to give back to community. And as for, I mean, the silver spoon comments, that's things I grew up hearing. So it's not something that, you know, but
rich boy, rich kid.
I still get that. But my issue with some of those comments is that, first of all, it comes with a negative connotation off the bat.
Right?
And for me, it's, I don't want to say it's a level of hypocrisy, but there is, insofar as everyone's trying to put their own children in the same position you are insulting. So how does that work? All right. So, I mean, if it's someone who's born into a privileged situation and they are looking down upon people in less privilege, I can understand where those comments come from.
Right.
But just off the bat like that, it feels a little excessive. But, you know, you get used to it. At the end of the day, you have to realize that, yes, you were born in a position where you had an advantage. It's your responsibility to make the most of it and do the most you can to contribute to someone else also having an advantage.
True. And that's something you find that a lot of people in your position don't necessarily do. And they take for granted the opportunity they've been given. And you know, they just live lavish lives and forget about what are you doing to contribute back to society.
Yep.
And what I think you're also doing, based on what I'm getting, is also ensuring that, yes, before you have created generational wealth, let me ensure that I could create that generational wealth for the next generation of Jamaris. So kudos to you. And by the way, you need to make the next generation of Jamaris. Inside joke.
That's putting kind of pressure on me, sir.
Everson Jamari Jr., thank you for taking us to 3:30. Thank you so much. Give people the opportunity now to get your information, your handles on social media.
Yeah, man, I actually just started properly pushing my social handles. I got professionals to do this, so they're not finalized. But right now, if you need to reach me, it's ejanmariejr@gmail.com. That's ejanmariejr@gmail.com. I'll even give my phone number right now, because whoever needs it, 722-5387. The Facebook page will be up. It should be EJ Consulting by this weekend. And also looking at the Instagram handle. I just have to make sure that they're all free at this point. Or available, I should say. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Everest Shamari Jr., thank you for joining us right here on Youth Unplugged. Of course, Youth Unplugged brought to you the kind compliments of our sponsor, Bank of St. Lucia.
Youth Unplugged.